Some of you are going to find this a bit incredulous, but here's something that federal, state, and local governments all tell us to do that we should actually listen to. Eat more fruits and vegetables. You've heard about the health benefits of increasing plant-based nutrients into your diet, but how can you easily consume all the fruits and veggies needed? Well, it's easy. By adding grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity into your meals. Grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity is a power blend that has 31 fruits and vegetables in every scoop. Organic vegetables, super greens, super fruits, and super sprouts. It is fortified with essential vitamins plus an immunity boost. And right now, you can get a free 2-week supply of grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity by just paying $8.95 for the shipping and handling. And not only that, you'll also get a free frother to quickly whip up your healthy and nutritious grown American drink. Go to grownamericansuperfood.com/John and order today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the John Fugelsang Podcast.
This is Sirius XM Progress. I'm John Fugelsang. Welcome to the love fest that is Tell Me Everything. Hello to all of our evil army of the night. For the next 3 hours, we invite you to join the show at 866-997-4748. There's a little bit to talk about. Hello to all of our daywalkers, everyone who listens on demand or on the app or on the John Fugelsang podcast. We got nothing but love for y'all as well. You guys are always welcome to stay up late and call us sometime. We are blessed to be joined by the most dangerous production team in radio. Thea Harper out of Brooklyn, Chris Hauselt out of the glorious Confederacy. I come to you tonight from Los Angeles. It's a pleasure to be with you. We got a really, really, really good show tonight to cap off a crazy week. Do you remember how this week began? Remember way, way back through the mists of time when the Supreme Court said Donald Trump had to be on the ballot in Colorado and everyone lost their goddamn minds? Remember way back then when the Supreme Court essentially gave Donald Trump permission to lose Colorado for a third time and progressives got way too upset about it? Yeah, well, it's been crazy. We've had a Super Tuesday since then. We have had a State of the Union address since then, and we are so glad you guys are with us tonight. We are blessed to welcome back our Indigenous Voices segment with Simon Moya-Smith and Julie Franchella. And coming up this hour, we're going to discuss the week in review, last night's speech, and of course, what is in store for the Oscars this weekend with Nobel laureate TV's Frank Conniff. And as always, our most important guest is you guys, 866-997-4748, 866-997-GRIT. Let's do a show. Gotta tell you, as of today, tickets are on sale for the Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour Save the World Tour edition. I'm trying to get more words into that. We've been doing this tour for a dozen years. It's been a blast. We've played some of the most gorgeous theaters in America, from the Beacon in New York to the Pantages in L.A. to the Chicago Theater. And we've been joined on stage over the years by everybody from Lily Tomlin to Nancy Pelosi to Rob Reiner to Margaret Cho to, well, Joy Reid. This year, for the first time, we have partnered with Live Nation, because I wanted to know what that experience would be like. After doing the tour independently for a dozen years, we have shacked up with our friends over there at Live Nation to bring the Save the World Tour all over the place. It's an event, it's a happening, it's a party, and it's for deeply moral people with deeply inappropriate humor. We're going to be kicking off the tour April 13th in Minneapolis at the Pantages Theater, April 27th in Philly, May 11th, Madison, Wisconsin, May 18th, Albuquerque, New Mexico. In June, we'll be in Seattle at the Moore Theater. We played there like 12 years ago. That's where Nirvana shot the Smells Like Teen Spirit video. We'll be at the Moore on June 1st to June 22nd, playing Denver, Colorado. It's been a long time since we've been there. July 13th, we're in Boston. And July 27th, for the first time ever, the tour hits Atlanta. I understand the weather's quite mild and pleasant in late July in Atlanta. I can't wait. August 3rd, we're at New York at Legendary Town Hall, the first time we've ever done the show at Town Hall. I'm very excited for that. We'll be in Chicago doing a live show for the Democratic Convention this summer. I will also be broadcasting this show from the Democratic Convention this summer. At some point, I'm going to have to tell my producer, Chris, that's going to happen. September 7th, we're back in Portland, Oregon. September 21st, Durham, North Carolina. September 28th, Phoenix, Arizona. How did we get three shows in 1 month? My God. Blackmailing Stephanie Miller really pays off. We hit Kansas City for the first time on October 12th. Big pay-per-view show in Los Angeles. I assume it's a pay-per-view show here in Los Angeles, November 2nd. That's going to be at the Orpheum in L.A. And we will be in D.C. for inauguration weekend, January 18th, regardless of who is sworn in. If you want tickets, you can go to sexyliberal.com, livenation.com, ticketmaster.com. Apparently, it's a different entity for every city. Hope to see you there. It's going to be a party. Stephanie Miller, Frangela, myself, Hal Sparks, and lots of special guests bringing deeply inappropriate political humor to this election cycle. All right. Our number is 866-997-4748. And I got to ask what you thought of the speech again. I think Biden killed it. I got to be honest. I didn't love everything, but he killed it and he crushed it and he owned it and he nailed it. He did all four things. He killed it while owning it and nailed it while crushing it. He was on point and on fire. He was on fire and on point while killing it and crushing it. And look, here he is talking about how his predecessor, the former Republican, told Putin, do whatever the hell you want. I thought this was one of the first early powerful moments of the speech.
Now my predecessor, a former Republican president, tells Putin, quote, do whatever the hell you want. That's a quote. A former president actually said that, bowing down to a Russian leader. I think it's outrageous, it's dangerous, and it's unacceptable.
Honestly, I thought it was really strong. At one point, I was like, forget about president. I'll vote for this guy to host the Oscars. I mean, at its best, he did what he had to do. It was like a movie of Jimmy Stewart playing Obi-Wan Kenobi, directed by Rob Reiner. And for the most part, I think he pulled it off, especially the last 5 minutes of the speech. If you get a chance, just listen to the last five. Biden's White House Twitter account posted the last 5 minutes last night. The last 5 minutes of that speech will make you cry harder than the first 5 minutes of Up. Here's a piece from earlier in the speech where he talks about how we've got to stand up for seniors once again. And he tempts them. He tempts them to try to cut entitlements. Give a listen.
Tonight, let's all agree once again to stand up for seniors. Many of my friends on the other side of the aisle want to put Social Security on the chopping block. If anyone here tries to cut Social Security, Medicare, or raise the retirement age, I will stop you. The working people who built this country, pay more into Social Security than millionaires and billionaires do. It's not fair. We have two ways to go. Republicans can cut Social Security and give more tax breaks to the wealthy. That's the proposal.
Here it comes.
You guys don't want another $2 trillion tax cut? I kind of thought that's what your plan was. Well, that's good to hear. You're not going to cut another $2 trillion for the super wealthy. That's good to hear. I'll protect and strengthen Social Security and make the wealthy pay their fair share.
I mean, my God, the GOP is now socialist because last night they were publicly owned. I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene was going after him and she was trying to get attention anytime she could. You probably saw the footage of the president walking into the rotunda as she was filming him with a videotape trying to exploit the murder of Laken Riley, saying, say her name, say her name. And Joe Biden did exactly what you should do to win any debate with a right-wing lunatic. Don't debate the right-wing lunatic, especially when they're wearing a baseball cap to the State of the Union. Whew. I mean, I think Joe Biden gave one of the greatest political speeches of the past 50 years. And Donald Trump is acting like every evil child from the Willy Wonka factory tour. It was quite an event. You know, what did I not like? I'd like him to not say the word illegal again. That's a slur. He doesn't need to say it. It's a terrible word. I've never heard Fox News refer to any white lawbreaker as an illegal. But I realized as soon as I said that last night, he shouldn't say it. But that said, saying it probably helped him. Let's not forget, at this point, who are you campaigning for when you're running for president? White people in seven states who still can't decide between Trump and Biden. That's it. That's what this all comes down to. White people in seven states who still can't make up their mind. And I gotta say, I think Biden did the impossible. He made people get excited about the next 8 months. If you need a clearer contrast, his job was to show a contrast between him and Trump, right? That was the job, to show that how he's different than him and Trump. And I don't think it could be clearer now. It's not even like it's apples and oranges, my friends. It's like it's apples and flaming globs of Satan's vomit. That's what it is. Now, of course, Sean Hannity, that noted journalist, he was furious. He said, oh, Biden's angry. He's angry and he's shouting. Okay. Shouting as Kim Guilfoyle and angry. Why? Why would Biden be angry? Because y'all have lied about him for 4 years straight because you tried to have a coup to overthrow the government? Maybe he's a bit peeved at all of you Republicans showing off pictures of his son's dick for the last 2 years. You ever think of that? He owned them, my friends. I was really impressed. I went into it thinking he would do okay. But man, and again, Biden wasn't my first choice in 2020, wasn't my second choice in 2020. But I take off my scarf to the man. He did a great speech at 81 years old with a stutter. 81 with a stutter. I needed to take a nap halfway through the first Dune movie. But he showed last night why the Republicans have always been scared of him. Donald Trump tried to blackmail Zelensky into smearing him and lying about him. They've been humiliating and harassing his son purely to smear the father. I wouldn't respect Joe Biden if he wasn't angry with those guys. Here's a pretty interesting clip here. We uncovered this. C-SPAN uncovered this. This is a clip of Joe Biden giving the Democratic rebuttal to Ronald Reagan's State of the Union in 1983. I wish you could see the video of this, but just give a quick little listen. And the way he does it, it's in a campaign office, and Biden's doing it without a teleprompter, just walking towards a handheld camera. I don't even remember them doing State of the Unions like this. Give a quick listen.
We can criticize the Republicans, and we will. We think, frankly, though, it's time we put up or shut up. So you're going to hear a number of proposals from the Democratic Party. Some of them are very basic, tried and true. And some of them are new ideas. But all of them fall within a very positive and hopeful democratic view. A vision of America that says we can rebuild to a strong economy. We can create better and more secure jobs. And we can really put this country back to work. And two other themes run through all the democratic ideas you're going to hear tonight. Opportunity and fairness. The cornerstone rights of the American people. As Franklin Roosevelt said during the recovery from the Great Depression, just four words are important now. These four words, it can be done.
That's Joe Biden's voice from when I was a little kid. Now, did you get to see Katie Britt's response last night? We covered the speech last night with a live special. And I want to thank everyone at SiriusXM, especially Chris and Thea, for pulling it off and making it really fun to do live coverage of events. And all of our guests were wonderful. But we didn't cover Katie Britt's rebuttal. And I feel bad. I saw the beginning of it. I didn't get to see the end. Did she ever finally get to speak with the manager? Did she? Because that lady put the cue in Karen. I don't know what you thought, but to me, she was like a Douglas Sirk melodrama on Vicodin. I mean, I was watching the whole thing thinking like, no, really. What antidepressant is this an ad for? Which one? Is it one I've been on? Like, I felt like that speech was like this, the first scene in the Lifetime movie where the heroine loses her job humiliatingly before she has to move back to her small hometown. Katie, show me on the doll where America hurt you. I mean, this is Alabama. I guess this is Alabama's way of telling us that Tommy Tuberville is the smart one. There's actually parts of Alabama where she is legally a member of Mensa. But the whole thing was dispiriting because when I watched it again today, it's clear this was the Republicans hiring someone they thought was female and young to pay lip service to women voters and younger voters. that they're not actually interested in serving at all. And the best part of her speech was going onto Twitter and seeing how outraged right-wing people were. Oh my God, Laura Loomer lost her mind. Mike Johnson as well, because Mike Johnson was nodding several times. That was crazy. I mean, Laura Loomer's response to Mike Johnson nodding was like porn for the angels. But congratulations, Katie Britt. I can't wait for my kid to learn about you at Dead Inside Women's History Month. I'll just say this before the break. Katie Britt, if you're telling a gruesome horror story about violent cartel sex trafficking and everybody's laughing at the details, you're not good at this. Of course, the real story is going to be, considering how well the speech went last night, what does that mean for Donald Trump's big money donors today? We want to know what you guys think. We are at 866-997-4748. 866-997-GRIT. Going to take a really quick break right here. When we return in just a moment, we'll be joined by the great Frank Conniff to talk about all the news of the week, and the Oscars are coming up. It's not too early to start speculating about what happens when the most popular people on Earth have a popularity contest. We'll be right back.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
We're at 866-997-4748. Let's go back to the phone. We'll be joined very shortly this hour by Julie Francella and Simon Moya-Smith. But I want to talk to Dave in Pittsburgh, calling on line 5. Dave, thank you for waiting on hold. You're on Progress.
Hey, John. I have an idea here on how Biden could have made his speech even better.
Tell me.
You know how comedians borrow stuff from each other all the time, right?
I know nothing about that, no. But go on.
What if he borrowed the famous response from a heckler from Steve Martin? You know, especially that one guy who's just yelling at him, just go, yeah, I remember my first beer. Boom, it goes to show his mental acuity. Goes to show he's the man of the people. He enjoys beer like the rest of us schmucks.
It's true.
You know, it goes to show his rape your wit.
So true. But I mean, there's so many common responses to hecklers that comics do. I'd be willing to see Biden do all of it. You know, sir, do I come to your job and jump around while you're trying to mop the booths? I mean, you know, there's do I come to your job and bother you while you're trying to collect all the carts in the parking lot, sir? There's so much he could do. But I thought he did a great job last night. He totally pulled the same rope-a-dope on him he pulled last year. He got them to more or less agree verbally in the room with him and go against their stated position. I couldn't believe it. He just made it look easy.
I can think of one heckler response I wouldn't like him to do.
What would you not like?
I wouldn't like to see him do Michael Richards' heckler response.
No one needs to see that. And you know why? Because that night, that night at the Laugh Factory on Sunset, Michael Richards did not have a heckler response. And if you're a white person and you're going to try saying the N-word on stage, you better have that material written out and know it well. It's not the sort of thing I recommend improvising.
Lenny Bruce did.
Oh, well, yeah, but Lenny Bruce was different. Lenny Bruce was doing it at a time when it wouldn't destroy your career to say it. I mean, there's Carlin albums where he still says it, and I don't think those could be released today.
Probably not, but, you know, at the time, it worked.
Right on, man. Right on. Well, I will forward your suggestions over to the president, and we'll see what we can do. I would love to. I love watching him deal with hecklers. He made it look easy last night.
His next term.
Well, except, you know, he had it. Like, he knew exactly what they'd heckled him for. He was ready for Marjorie Taylor Greene to cynically exploit the murder of Laken Riley. He was totally ready for it, and when she did it, he was prepared and said, yeah, it was awful. That's when he said illegal, which I object to, but I'm sure it didn't hurt him in the polls. And that's why he turned her heckle into saying, so go ahead and let me pass this bill. Really well done.
Now, I could not watch it. I could only listen to it when he was saying about how, you know, that's how America is strong. Were the Republicans clapping and applauding along with that, or were they
No.
just, like, you know, sitting on their hands?
Sitting on their hands. I mean, they didn't stand up for teachers. They didn't stand up for raising the minimum wage. They didn't stand up for protecting democracy. They didn't stand up for trying to cure cancer. I mean, I don't know what orders Vladimir Putin has given Donald Trump to give to Mike Johnson, but wow, they just, you know.
You know, it reminds me of that line from MASH when I can't remember what it was, but they're like selling war bonds. They're like, you know, bet on America to win Pulitzer show. They're not even betting on America's show at this point.
I know. They're not. That's not their job. Their job is to keep their job. That's it. Their job is to keep their job and keep the money flowing to them. That's it. They don't care about abortion. They don't care about immigration. They don't care about inflation. These Republicans don't care about anything. If they did, they would have policies or work with Democrats to try to solve things. They care about keeping their job, which is why they won't do their job. Because if they do their job, the folks back home will say, well, there's somebody meaner and more racist I can vote for who won't work with Democrats. And so that's why we're in the position we're in right now.
Were there any policies of the Republican response?
No. No, there was. I mean, I'm trying to think if there were. I had no specific policies. There wasn't even any mention of Donald Trump in the Republican response. Like, they just did not know what they were doing last night.
And that's the choice that we have between, you know, a solid path forward or... Well, we're not.
We're more grifter chaos. You're exactly right, Dave. And I thank you for the call. It's good to hear
from
you.
All right.
Thank you, sir. 866. You too as well. 866-997-4748. Let me go to Bill in New Jersey over there on line 7. Bill, thank you so much for waiting on hold. What's up?
Thank you. Line 7? I love that one.
Okay. Well, we picked it for you.
Thank you. Yeah, I was thinking of that line I learned from you a long time ago, that quote that it's easier to fool somebody than to convince them that they've been fooled. And that's kind of the right wing right there. They don't smile much or have fun or anything. I don't think they realize how much better the world is that, you know, they don't get to appreciate that. You know, that's too bad.
I don't understand why, like, an optimistic message wouldn't work for them. Like, I don't understand why they're terrified to actually be willing to embrace people they disagree with and say, we disagree, but let's work together. Like, I think there's more adults who would respond to that than there are man babies who will like the hostility.
That's true. But regarding last night, I think they should have had the response first before Biden. Would have been better. They should have made it a little bit darker, and they should have played In the Arms of the Angels behind her. Well, you think? Like one of those animal commercials?
I would have watched, sir. That I would have definitely watched.
Right. And then they should have opened with Biden sitting on a stool, no tie, with a jacket over his shoulder and with a microphone, single spot, you know, and start delivering and, turn into rage and everything and do something even more dramatic than that woman tried to do.
I thought that woman did it was one of the best community theater productions of an Arthur Miller play I've seen in quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, right. a kitchen sink drama.
I do think they might have meant it for somehow for the Democrats because it was kitchen table issues, and she was sitting at a kitchen table. That's the only thing I can figure out that isn't dark, you know, about that whole kitchen scene.
I thought the kitchen was really dark. I honestly just felt like, wow, they are just going for this kind of regressive role mode. They are not trying to get anybody to vote for their party that isn't already voting for their party. Bill, I got to run, but I thank you very much for the call. It's great to hear from you. I want to go over to Joe in Yes, Chris. Hi.
Well, this, before we split to the next caller, I just if you entertain me for a second, I just want to give Bill's idea a chance here. So
okay.
Just
find some peace tonight in the arms.
To imagine what my story would entail. Fly to think about what the American dream can do across to just one generation in just one lifetime. It's truly breathtaking. But right now, the American dream has turned into a nightmare.
It's too good. It's too good,
it
Chris.
It really works.
It's too perfect. I'm sorry that that's like science has achieved something perfect thanks to you. Wow. That was great. I feel like, what number do I call to save those dying animals? That's exactly how I feel. Thank you for that. Now let me go to Joe in Brooklyn on line 5. Joe, thank you for waiting on hold. You're on Progress.
I've been thinking that same thing that she's doing, like the abandoned puppy advertisement.
Indeed,
it's unbelievable. Anyway, the thing I wanted to say is that when you said what kind of instructions that Putin has given Trump, I think that's the truth, actually. And I think I know why. I know why Trump likes Putin. He's liked him since the beauty pageants. That's not what I'm thinking. I wondered why the GOP couldn't figure out that this would be bad and they couldn't get away. And I think it's because...
What part? Wait. The GOP couldn't figure out which part was bad and couldn't get away.
They couldn't get away from Trump. I think there were some of them that might have wanted to, even Mitchell, he couldn't get away. And I think this is the only thing that makes sense. It defies human nature. I understand why Trump, because he's not human nature. He's doing something else. He's doing another sale. That's what he's doing.
Uh-huh. But You're right.
That's it. I went to school with him. He's talked to me before. I come from Jersey, and we know him. So. Yeah.
But know Trump?
That's not the point.
Well, I'm sorry. Wait. You know Trump?
I went to school with him.
That's right. I remember your call.
I'm
yes.
I'm in age. You're 2 years younger, but of course. So anyway, here's the thing: that the other ones, when Putin sends emissaries in 2016 to the GOP convention, now that was something that I never understood why that was allowed, really. Send the enemies to our... they weren't officially enemies then, but we ought to declare them as cyber enemies. So let's make a new word up at any point. So he's in Moscow. How does he know? It's very important to him. He's orchestrating this whole thing. So he says to his guys, get tapes. It's perfect. These dumb Americans.
Get tapes on what? What tapes? For compromise?
On the discussions that they had, discussions of letting Trump run and Fancy Bear happening. That was the taped thing. They can't get away now. I understand how Putin works. And it's like National Enquirer stuff.
Yep.
That's how they operate.
Putin has a lethal understanding of American trash culture and how much we like hating each other historically.
Exactly. So he is running the show, and that's the elephant in the room. He's running the GOP through Trump.
I agree. And the discomfort on Mike Johnson's face last night proves it to me.
I've thought it for a long time.
Right on.
Because of his nature, it's like all these things are coming together. The stars are crossing. We are at war with a faction of our government, and we must admit that. They know they're at war, and we're acting like it's going to be an election. But this is coming to a showdown in their minds.
I know.
And I tell you, Biden better, if he has any Trump people left on his Secret Service, I don't know the answer to that, but you ought to look it up.
I agree with what you're saying, but I just give you the caveat. I give you
Mike Pence tie.
I give you one caveat to that, which is there's more of us. There's more of us. And that's what I put my faith in, man. I thank you very much for the call. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, more of your calls, and we'll be joined by Simon Moya-Smith and Julie Franchella, 866-997-4748. This is Progress.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Welcome back. So we've been talking a lot about last night's State of the Union address. Joe Biden did mention the indigenous peoples of the United States, and in a backwards way, Alabama Senator Katie Britt did as well. In fact, Katie Britt said some stuff that shouldn't shock me, but it still did. Not in its overt racism, but in its overt tone deafness. And I'm really, really proud to have two of the smartest and most empathetic people we know to join us now. Simon Moya-Smith is an Oglala Lakota and Chicano journalist. He's a contributing writer at NBC News and TheNation.com. He's the author of the forthcoming book, Your Spirit Animal is a Jackass, and he is an adjunct professor of indigenous studies at the University of Colorado, Denver. Simon, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
Thank you. And of course, Julie Franchella is with us, activist, artist, writer, and veteran mental health professional with over 28 years of experience working with complex trauma in the clinical field. Julie served as executive director of a domestic violence center and spent 13 years as a clinical caseworker at a residential treatment center for Indigenous youth and their families. She is an enrolled member of the Ojibwe of Botswana First Nation Reserve. Julie, it's great to have you back. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Thank
Happy
you, guys.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday right back. I've been wanting to ask you your thoughts about the speech last night. And I don't, you know, we don't really ever get to hear the First Nations point of view about State of the Union speeches. So I'm honored you're both here. I got to confess, it took me a minute or two to pick up on the weird thing Katie Britt said last night. Weird because it's the 21st century. But let me start with you, Julie. What did you think of last night's dueling speeches?
First of all, I have to say that I thought Biden was admirable. I hope that when I get to be his age, I'm as lucid as he is. I do have to say, and I don't know if you felt this, but I felt that Senator Katie Britt, she gave me such Carrie mom vibes. Do you know the lady who played Carrie's mom, you know, the yes. Take off the dress, we'll burn it together and we'll ask for forgiveness. That was how I thought it was a joke. Seriously. Nice. I thought, am I watching like a Karen convention through the window? It just felt like that. But anyway, she actually made a comment that it just took off in Indian country. Everybody was talking about it. And what she said was, we are standing in the footsteps of those pioneers who tame the wild. And that, my friends,
tame
if
the
we
wild.
Decode what the wild, what she's really saying is, you know, first of all, the wild wasn't wild. You know, it was home to millions of Native Americans living in harmony with the land. It, again, is that manifest destiny, you know, rhetoric. You're talking about, you know, pioneers, you know, obviously invaders might be a term that history books would shy away from. But, you know, it's the language of the manifest destiny of civilizing, you know, the savages, of justifying, you know, genocide. And, you know, it. Simon, I know we were kind of talking about it, but I don't know if people noticed
I texted you right away. I was watching it and I was like, I got to tell Julie, we got to talk about this. When she said that about taming the wild.
Taming the wild.
Jesus.
What a tasteful romantic way to explain ethnic cleansing, isn't it? Taming the wild.
Right, exactly. And it, I mean, look at the language that she uses, the wild. Like, it is just shy of saying taming the savages. But when you look at history and you look at what they did, these people, the colonists, invaders, they were the savages. They were the brutes. If anyone needed taming, it was them. They needed to chill the fuck out. But you know, when it, going back to Biden, when usually if a president or a vice president has a speech and they're going to go down the list of the demographic list, right? The diversity list. If we get a mention, we're happy. Oh, I mean, yeah. And that is something that is sad. That's a sad reality that we live to go. They're going to go Black, Asian, Hispanic, women, gay, disabled. And they totally skip over a whole group, a whole demographic, the first peoples. But last night he mentioned us, I think, once or twice. So that was a small little win for us. But then, of course, we listened to this jackass out of Alabama. And it was, first off, poor acting. Everybody saw that. It was ridiculous. But then she referenced the wild, meaning us, indigenous people. Like, we didn't have complex societies. We didn't have rules. We didn't have our own form of laws. But it, just like Julie said, it's a way to justify the genocide and that rah, 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 manifest destiny bullshit.
It's totally true. I mean, it just, it always is something there to frame the process of stealing this land as something noble. And never, and I mean, to beat the merciless savages, as our founders described them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You lost. You lost. You lost.
Oh, that's what they
People
say all
say
the time
that
to
all
us.
The time.
Oh, you
all
lost fair time. And square. You like, lost. Oh, fair and square is murder, rape, giving us smallpox blankets. That's fair and square. I guess that's what they consider fair and square.
Yeah, fair and square is when the U.S. government doesn't break every treaty, break every agreement, go back on their word on everything. It's totally true.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's interesting because there's an article that you all sent me from Native News Online, which shows that, and I find this amazing, that there's potentially a really significant impact of First Nation voters in these elections coming up this year.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
Native American votes. They have played a crucial role in helping Democrats win in key states in past elections. If you look at, I think in 2020, the presidential election, Native American voters were instrumental in swinging Arizona in favor of the Democrats. So that's showcasing their potential to impact the outcome in battleground states. And, you know, Sliman wrote a piece a couple of years ago in The Nation, and, you know, he kind of speaks to that. And I think... Yeah. I think it was in 2002, going back a little while, but South Dakota Senator Tim Johnson, Democrat, was reelected by 500 votes when the final votes were counted on the Pine Ridge Reservation. So, you know, there's a lot to kind of pay attention to with Native American
I mean, especially because we talk so much about how insanely evenly divided the voting electorate is. And that's why, yes, every vote means a lot. And that's why this Democratic Party should be really hustling to try to sell itself to indigenous voters, because the Republican Party's not doing any outreach, are they? I mean, does the GOP do any outreach for First Nations
Republicans,
voters in this country?
They try with the oil and gas natives. The tribes that lean into oil and gas profits, they try that.
How do
like
they
Tom
do?
Cole. Tom Cole is the... one of the only indigenous elected officials at Congress, and he's an oil and gas brat. So we don't, when Standing Rock was happening, he doesn't say anything because, his pockets are greased with oil money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is it true that Native Americans living in urban centers are 70% of the total population?
Of the total indigenous population, more than 70% of indigenous people now live off the reservation. So that's that's in the cities, it's in the suburbs. New York City has one of, if not the largest indigenous population in a city. Alaska, Anchorage, Alaska, Phoenix, Arizona. Yeah. Here in New Mexico, you have Albuquerque, because you're surrounded by the reservation. Right. So there's a lot of indigenous people now that are among you. And so we have that 70% does have access to the polls. Many of us have those addresses that you won't find on a reservation. So if you're on a res and you need to get to the polls, some people have to drive 100 miles just to get to a polling place. And then if you don't have an address on the reservation, so you can't get your ballot mailed to you like you can if you live in Denver and you don't want to go to the polls. You just want to do it that. Go ahead and mail it back. It's not the same for Indigenous people on reservations.
Yeah. Cool. And, you know, they're predicting, I think there was about at least 5 million American Indian voters in the United States in both rural and urban communities. So that's according to the U.S. Census Bureau. So Native voters in Alaska, in Arizona, Michigan, Montana, I think Nevada, North Carolina, Wisconsin, they could have significant impact on the 2024 races for Congress, not just Congress, but Senate and the presidential election as well. So attention. Pay attention to us because we can actually, you know, get some stuff done out there.
Yeah, you just rattled off a bunch of states that are swing states. And if it's 5 million voters in this country and every vote counts, I'm looking to see if this administration reaches out even more.
Yeah.
Well, the sad part, too, is that some of those states that she mentioned are still involved in voter suppression of Indigenous people.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Right? That
when it comes to voter IDs, they want to say, well, you need an address on your ID. Like, we've never needed an address on the reservation to vote. And like, well, you do now. And that's a form of voter suppression that continues to happen to Indigenous people. So the voter suppression that happens around the country is a little different when it comes to Indigenous people, since they have non-traditional mailing addresses on the reservation.
That's right.
There's homelessness. There's lack of residential, lack of access to affordable and reliable broadband. So it's a unique situation when it comes to trying to block out the Native vote. I think the Republicans do know that, you know, when it comes down to it, we can be that pivotal swing demographic in those hard fought statewide races. So they're doing everything they can to go, all right, so let's keep the Indians over there, because if this gets really close, they're going to swing it to the right,
absolutely. I was going to say, even like identification, having, you know, proper identification, because a lot of times our, status, we call them status cards or enrollment, they're not acceptable as identification because their addresses aren't on them. So that's another issue as well.
This is where I remind the audience that, the Constitution does not say anything about needing an ID when you exercise your right to vote. There has never been an election in this country that was swayed by voter impersonation. Voter impersonation has never been a problem. And this is a way to make it harder for low-income people to exercise a fundamental constitutional right. If you have to travel and spend a dime to get a photo ID, then that's a poll tax and that's illegal. Yeah. And this is the racket people have been dealing with in this country.
Well, they also know reservations are geographically isolated, so it's easier for them that way, because they know on a lot of reservations, they lack reliable transportation too.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Let me go to the phones. We have a lot of people who want to say hi tonight. Russ is on the line, line 8 from Idaho. Russ, thank you so much for waiting on hold. You're on SiriusXM Progress with Simon and Julie.
Hey, John. Hey, Simon. Hey, Julie. Thanks for taking the call. Hey. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Russ.
Yes, hey, so Julie totally encouraged me to do this. I've never called into a show before.
Oh, that's you. That was you. Oh, hi.
That's me. Yeah, that's me.
Right on.
I have something I wanted to kind of get your guys' opinion on, I guess, feedback, what should I have done differently? This is something that happened 30 years ago. It would have been in May of 1994. I grew up on Long Island.
I'll tell you right now.
You know.
That was good. Yep. Go ahead. Let it go. 30 years ago, let it go. Just kidding. Go ahead.
Well, no, I've carried this for a long time. I grew up on Long Island. I grew up, very white, middle class, not a lot of experience or understanding of different racial issues and that sort of thing, and particularly with Indigenous people. I moved out west in 1994. A friend of mine had been going out to Jackson, Wyoming in the summers, and he talked me into coming out, and he's like, we got to stop in scenic South Dakota. So, Simon, this is going to very much relate to your nation and everything, but it was so eye-opening. I had no idea at that point in my life that this was part of our country, you know, and that these things existed. But we stopped in scenic. It was crazy from the minute we got there. But at the end of that night, we were hanging out behind a bar, and I was talking with a bunch of people from the reservation, from Pine Ridge, and this lady kind of sidled up next to me, and she was super inebriated, and she started screaming something, and then she passed out. Like, it just went down like a sack of potatoes, and it was really jarring. And nobody else seemed too fazed by it, and they kind of said, you know, what should we do? Let's just put her in the back of the car. And one of the guys said, well, I hope she doesn't start kicking like she did last time. And I was like, what is going on? And they put her in the back of the car, and as soon as they shut the door, she started kicking. Which I learned, I was telling someone the story a few months ago, and they said that's like a common response when people get, when they're really inebriated, get put in the back of like a police car or whatever.
Right.
So they drove off with her, you know, I assume took her back to her house or their house or whatever. And a whole bunch of stuff happened after that that was, you know, very awakening for me. We drove a bunch of guys down to the reservation, but the next day I was leaving, and it was like, you know, I think it was like five or so in the afternoon, and we're driving down this road, and it's dusty, it's windy. I think they were making a new highway or trying to pave the road. And I was driving from Rockyford back up to Pine Ridge, or to Scenic. And I saw her walking on the side of the road, the same lady.
Same lady.
And I pulled over, same lady that had passed out right next to me. Right. And I pulled over, asked her if she needed a ride, and she just got in my truck, and we were driving, and I think I was driving her back to Scenic or wherever she asked me to drop her off, and she just started talking kind of matter of fact about, like, this is all your fault. And I asked her, well, you know, what do you mean? And she said, you know, the way I am and the alcohol, and you took everything. And
so, you know, she was a Native woman.
And this is okay. In the context of, you know, I'm 22 years old, and I didn't know shit about shit. And I was kind of thinking, like, you know, geez, you know, I think I said to her something to the effect of, like, I think your people got treated really poorly, and I think it was unfair, and I'm sorry, but I didn't do it, you know, and I'm, you know, giving you a ride. And then I took her wherever she was going and let her go. But I've thought about this for years and years and years, and I look back, and, you know, obviously I wish I had been more empathetic, you know, but I think the question attached to this is, if you guys had been like whispering in my ear, or if this were to happen to me again, you know, tomorrow, what's the proper response for, like,
it's a thoughtful
someone,
question.
Like, a middle class white guy who's like my race did this to your guys' race.
Right.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, you know, it's Russ, right?
Yeah, it's Russ.
Russ, yeah. You know, alcohol for indigenous people, it's like, it's fire water. We call it fire water. And I lost my own mother to alcoholism. Sorry.
It's okay.
I'm really sorry.
It is a big issue, and thank you for your phone call, and I thank you for being empathetic enough that it would stick with you after 30 years, and that is something that it is a problem for Indigenous people, and it is, if you look at that woman, what I think of when I see that and experience that in my life is pain, and sometimes we
clearly
don't know how to deal with our pain, or we don't have the resources, or it's just so overwhelming. And so, you know, that has been traditionally a response, and you see it everywhere. And Indigenous, Simon and I were just talking about this, you know, alcohol suicide rates. I lost my sister to suicide 10 weeks after my mother passed from alcohol. So it's the trauma that doesn't go away.
Yeah.
And so the fact that you were,
and yet it's rampant it's rampant with white people too, but only Native Americans got smeared for it. I'm sorry, Julie, to interrupt.
Yeah, no, but it's, you know, the fact that you were empathetic, the fact that you gave her a ride, the fact that you listened to her, oftentimes Indigenous people are, it's the stereotype. They're alcoholic, or they're drunk, the drunk Indian. I mean, we hear that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up, I never, because I watched my mother, you know, suffer from alcoholism, I didn't take a drink, I think, until I was 41 was the first time I ever took a drink, and never had my children ever see me. I never wanted my children to see me take a drink, because I know what that was like to grow up in, you know, that setting and that environment. And so just being empathetic and being able to be someone who sees the humanity in a person that's suffering is, and I think you did that. I think you did that. I don't think you have anything to feel bad about.
Sorry for making you upset.
Oftentimes people will project. It's just life, right?
Yeah, I feel like I've thought about this so much, and particularly your guys, this segment, like, really has got me thinking more curious.
Well, hang on, Russ, because Simon's going to scream at you in a second. Simon's going to yell at you in a second, okay, for being a colonizer. So just hang on.
Shit.
That's what I was expecting out of this, actually.
It's fine now. No, you know, thank you for giving her a ride. But I think what you need to understand, too, is that we are dealing with intergenerational trauma, okay?
Yes.
Hundreds of years of rape and murder and removal and maiming and child theft and lies and broken treaties. Everything that you could do to a people, a genocide, has happened to us. So you go to a reservation and you have Indian Health Services, which is basically a clinic, and they're not flush with, like, psychologists or psychiatrists. So how do they deal with it? Just like most people, substance, something. And yep. I mean, so again, we have to remember that as humans, we all are suffering in one form or another. But as Indigenous people isolated on a reservation, having only a clinic available to them and no psychiatrists, but they have maybe alcohol, they maybe have pills, they're gonna self-medicate in one way or another. And now to go back to her comment saying, this is your fault. Well, maybe not you personally,
no,
but you guys are still on our fucking land. You guys have docked and you haven't left, and things haven't really gotten better. We haven't seen you guys do much other than come to the reservation with a Bible and say, this is, I'm going to save you. And it's like, you know, those people before you came with a Bible and that was fucked up. We don't trust you anymore. And so I think as Indigenous people, there is this, especially when they come to the reservation or when they start saying, I'm a quarter Cherokee, we take a step back because, yes, maybe you didn't do anything personally. You were born here as just like the rest of us by accident of birth. I'm a male, I'm Chicano, and I'm Oglala. I didn't get to choose that. You didn't get to choose to be whatever you decide, meaning you could be non-binary, male, female, it's up to you. But you were born this way. And so, unfortunately, you have to deal with the repercussions of what your people did. And so I think every Native American, every Indigenous person has that right to go, what the fuck, man? And then your response should be, yeah, that was pretty fucked up. And again, thank you for giving her a ride. But as Indigenous people, you have to understand, and I hope everybody understands, that stereotype of Indigenous people being drunks. I wasn't born on my res. I can sit at a bar and have a cocktail, but I still get people looking at me kind of like, oh shit, that Indian's having a drink. And that sucks. And I don't do that when I look at the Irish. They have a reputation for being drunks, and I don't look at them going,
oh, I do, Simon. I'm Irish. I do that. I will wallow in those stereotypes for my people. Absolutely.
Oh, okay. All right. But anyway, that's my response, my first response. Maybe call back and we can discuss this again, because that is generally how Indigenous people feel. You guys came over on the Nina Pinta Santa Maria and the Mayflower. You docked it and it hasn't really gotten better for us.
Russ,
yeah,
I'm with you.
I didn't take it personally. I was not angry at her at all. You know, it's just something I've always thought about. Like, I should have been much more empathetic. I think I was too young at the time and didn't really have the context of all the genocide and everything. And but I think about it all the time. If I wish I could have gone back, would I give her a hug? Would I put my hand on her arm and say, I'm really sorry? You know, I just don't know what the right response.
I admire your empathy, Russ, but remember, please, it's never too late for white guys to start trying to be part of the solution. It's never too late for white guys to start trying to be part of a solution.
I'm crying, John.
You are. You're sincere. I can see your heart from here, and I thank you for calling.
That's exactly right. You know, there is this level of empathy, I think, that is starting to happen because people are hearing the stories, people are understanding what the true history of Turtle Island is. I never say America, Canada. I always say Turtle Island. You know, and it's not your fault, Russ. It is just the history, and it is in our bones. We call it blood memory. All of the trauma that my mother went through, and my grandmother, and my all of my family, it's in our DNA, you know, and just like anyone else, not just Indigenous people. And so, you know, it is about our shared humanity. What would you want? What would you have wanted someone to do if that was, if you were in that situation?
Or if your family member, your mother, your
If that was your mother, I always think that if that was my mother, what would I have wanted? Or my sister, you know, who we lost as well. What would I have wanted? How would I have wanted them to be treated? And I've spent 30 years of my life or more, my career, trying to help people through their trauma, their intergenerational trauma. I worked mostly with Indigenous youth and families. So, yeah. Thank you so much, Russ.
Thank you again for the call. But Julie,
greetings to your...
Well, to your point, I think that that's why it's so moving that we're hopefully going to see Lily Gladstone win an Oscar this weekend. She'll be the first American Indian woman to win an acting Oscar, not the first Indigenous person to be nominated or to win. And she's someone that, you know, you both have educated me a lot about how she's used her whole career to not just be an artist, but to really educate Americans about this experience and about, you know, the missing and murdered Indigenous women that our media doesn't want to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I know Lily right now, she's getting all of the accolades for Killers of the Flower Moon. But, you know, long before Killers, she was in a lot of, I think there's three different roles that were pointed out. One of them, she played a young Dene, which is Navajo girl, sent to an Indian boarding school in a performance at a Seattle-based theater company. And her character was based on a real-life woman who became, I think, a Navy nurse. And while her brother goes and enlists in the Marines as a code talker during World War II. And she talks about that performance and she talks about how, you know, it's just so interesting that this generation that has been taught not to speak their language at the boarding school then goes on to win a war for the United States because of the code talkers that, you know, existed.
Exactly right. Exactly right. I'm also hoping we'll see. Go ahead, please.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, if you get a chance to watch Reservation Dogs, she plays a role in season two. And it is the most nuanced Native character I've ever seen, I think, portrayed. She plays a mother who is a lapsed medicine woman, grieving her son's suicide while incarcerated for an unnamed crime. And that's season two. She is phenomenal. I was mesmerized by her. If you get a chance to see her in that, highly recommend that as well. Yeah.
On Hulu, by the way, guys.
Yeah. Also, Robbie Robertson will hopefully win a posthumous Oscar. I'd rather have Robbie still be with us than winning an Oscar, but for his score. And then Scott George and the Osage Tribal Singers are up for Best Song as well. So I'm hoping we see a lot of representation this weekend.
Yeah. They're actually going to be performing the song at the Academy Awards this year. So
that's great.
It'll be nice to see, you know, that for all to see. I'm excited.
Yeah, remember, be honest, they're not chanting. They're singing. They're not chanting. Those are songs. That's a language.
Thank you. You're exactly right. I got to say,
I didn't mean to bring everything down on a Friday.
But it's this film is the reason why I'm going to watch the Oscars this year, because I'm so inspired. And I loved Robbie. I knew him a bit for a couple of decades and he did this show many times. And I love Lily Gladstone's performance and I love what they tried to do with this film. It's a film that I appreciated the first time and loved the second time I saw it. And I normally bail on these things, but I think I'll watch because of Killers of the Flower Moon. Guys, we have to take a quick break. If you'll stay with us after the break, I'd love to play a little Did You Know when we come back and maybe take another couple calls. Next hour, my conversation with Eddie Izzard about her performance in the solo production of Hamlet, where she plays 23 characters. It's basically the same conversation as this, really. We'll be right back in just a moment. 866-997-GRIT. This is Progress.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I am so thrilled that we have on a Friday night Simon Moya-Smith and Julie Francella joining us. Guys, thank you so much for being flexible the last 2 weeks. We had to bump you for two Thursdays in a row, and I'm so glad we still got to have you on Fridays. We'll be back in our normal slot next week. Let's play another round of Did You Know? Simon Moya-Smith, please kick us off.
All right. Did you know that you sound like an idiot when you say bottom of the totem pole? Okay, the bottom of the totem pole is the strongest. The totem pole does not stand without the bottom. So stop saying, oh, you're bottom of the totem pole. No, that is the strongest part of the totem pole.
Very nice. I love that. Ooh. I mean, generally, we should try to avoid totem pole imagery in general, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's just when they say it, you're like, are you serious? You don't know how that works?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I never even thought of it. Thank you. That's brilliant. Julie, what do you have?
Well, it is International Women's Day. Happy International Women's Day. And so this one is kind of related. In many nations, red, the color red, is known to be the only color that spirits see. So by wearing red, we hope to call back the missing spirits of our missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. That's why we use the color red. So. Wow. Did you know?
I never knew that one. Simon, back over to you.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. This year marks 100 years that we have been American citizens. The United
That's right.
States have considered us American citizens. So in June 1924, Congress passed the Indian Citizenship Act. But we didn't get the right to vote until about the 50s or the 60s because that was determined by states.
That's one I actually knew, believe it or not.
Oh, right.
I did, in fact, know that one. Will there be any kind of commemoration of it, you think, this year? It seems like it's the sort of thing that, you know, a smart White House would want to talk about.
They will. Yeah. I don't know if Indigenous people will. I mean, again, we don't acknowledge, yay, colonizers, you know, great. No, we're not going to do that. They'll probably do that for photo ops, but you're not going to find me, or I'm sure you're not going to find Julie and all of us going, hey, happy 100 years of being an American citizen on stolen land. Yeah, that's not going to happen.
I know. Julie, what's your next did you know?
Did you know that there's something in Canada called the 60s scoop? And what that was after the residential schools started to close down, in the 50s and actually 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, even 90s, actually even now, children were scooped from their Indigenous families. Child welfare services would apprehend them and put them in non-Indigenous families. And one of the reasons, in some cases, the removal of Indigenous children served economic and political motives, including controlling Indigenous lands and resources by undermining Indigenous family structures and communities. These policies contributed to weakening Indigenous claims to land and self-determination. So the 60s scoop.
Wow.
There's a TV series, if you get a chance, on PBS. It's Jennifer Podemsky. It's amazing. It's called Little Bird. And I just finished watching it, and it tells the whole story of the 60s scoop. So it's amazing.
I mean, this is you know, what we talked about so much during the Trump administration family separation plan for migrants, except that was just about punishing poor people and stealing children to turn them white. This is way beyond residential schools, what you're talking about. It's not just about stealing children to turn them white. This is about stealing children to better steal the land.
Mm-hmm. Right. And even another did you know is that whole idea of blood quantum. That's a colonizer's idea to, in Canada, at least, little by little, once your bloodline runs out, the crown land or the trust land that they call it here goes to the government. So they want us to be, you know, little by little gotten rid of so that
they can take the land. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I want to say I'm surprised, but I'm not. Simon, you got another did you know for us?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So my partner, my fiance, she grew up in a small little village in northern Alaska. She's Yupik and Inupiaq, and she was telling me that they are the only ones, not the white people who've moved up to Alaska. They're the only ones that can take fossilized mammoth ivory, that the one that they find on the shoreline, and they can keep it. White people caught with that will get arrested.
Really?
Yeah, because it's cultural and traditional. So they're just like when I said last week that we are the only ones that enrolled indigenous people down here. We're the only ones that can have eagle feathers legally. We can only gift them to other natives. We can't give them to white people. It's illegal for white people to have eagle feathers. It's the same thing up there, but it's for, fossilized mammoth ivory.
Guys, I learn so much from you both, and I feel so much when I listen to you both every time we do this segment. Simon, what is the best way for our listeners to follow you and keep up with all your work?
Mostly on Instagram. Simon said take a pic, but once in a while you'll find me on Twitter or X at Simon Moya Smith.
Julie Francella, how do we follow you?
You can follow me on all of the social media at Julie Francella, and I also have a website, juliefrancella.com. And thank you so much for having us on. I so appreciate it. And thank you again to the caller, Russ. That was very moving to me.
Thank you. Thank you both. And we can announce that Simon and Julie will be doing a special event in the SiriusXM studios with us later this month. As soon as we nail down the date, we'll hype that one up too. Guys, have a great weekend. Thank you both.